Hej och välkomna till Prestationspodden. Jag heter Caroline Norbeli och jag driver den här podden för att sprida kunskap om stress. Jag gör det här också för att ta reda på hur lever man i den här världen och mår bra. Vill ni ha mina gästers bästa tips ifrån de olika avsnitten, så råder jag dig att prenumerera på mitt nyhetsbrev på carolinnorbeli.com. Jag hoppas att det är bra med er. Jag sitter här på yogamanna och det är väldigt glad över. Det är jag alltid. Men det är någon energi här som är helt fantastisk. Den är så tyst och det går inte att beskriva. Alltså alla utmattade borde testa deras klasser. Bara att vara i den här energin är så härlig. Jag har intervjuat Neil Morton och vi pratar om att vara sig själv. Och jag vill nämna några ord om det innan avsnittet sätter igång. För att det är ju någonting jag tror på väldigt mycket. Att vara sig själv är liksom nyckeln till både läkning. Det är nyckel till att ha mindre stress. Det är nyckel till framgång också. Och det tror jag att det är något vi inte tror. Vi tror att vi ska vara någonting annat för att det ska gå bra. Att det som vi är inte duger. Och jag är ett jättebra exempel på det. Och jag funderade lite över det själv och bara, herregud vad jag höll på. Alltså, ja, innan jag då var coach så jobbar jag ju i reklambranschen. Det vet vissa av ni som lyssnar. Men min början där, det var ju helt sjukt. Jag ville vara art director för att min för detta pojkvän, viktigt, för detta pojkväns mamma var grafisk designer. Jag fick programmen, jag började lära mig dem och min dåvarande pojkvän var så här, men du är ju så kreativ, du måste in i den här branschen. Ja, jag kunde knappt programmen. Och det här är så sjukt. Men för att jag är ju, som ni vet, som lyssnar ofta och kanske följer mig på Instagram. Jag är långt ifrån en millimetermänniska. Jag är så långt ifrån det man kan tänka sig. Jag älskar de stora penseldragen. Och jag ska inte befinna mig i sådana här sammanhang där det ska vara så här, korrekt, mycket fingerfärdighet och sådär. Men då tyckte min dåvarande kille att jag skulle söka ett jobb på en byrå. Eller han kände några som behövde en originalare. Och en originalare är ju den som sätter det grafiska, alltså gör det arbetet. Så att till exempel om man gör en broschyr så är det de som lägger in allt som ska vara. Och det är ju extremt viktigt att det är rätt och rakt och sådär. Men jag var inte rädd för någonting. Det kanske är min styrka dock. Men jag åkte dit. De var ju jättekola och jättetrevliga. Och, alltså du vet som det är på en reklambyrå. Satte mig där och jag fick lite uppgifter. Men jag tror att liksom, jag åstadkom ju ingenting. Efter en vecka när jag hade varit där och suttit och flyttat saker fram och tillbaka. Alltså jag kunde knappt programmen. Ändå så var jag så envis att jag skulle in i det här reklambranschen. Nej men jag kommer ihåg de sa till mig när jag slutade så här. Alltså du kanske inte riktigt, de var så snälla. Du kanske inte riktigt kunde de här programmen. Men du är så trevlig. Och vi skulle gärna vilja ha dig i en annan roll i framtiden. Så snällt. Men jag gick därifrån. Jag skämdes inte. Men jag skäms nu när jag tänker tillbaka. Och så sökte jag ju in på Forsbergs. Och jag anklagar lite Forsbergs för att de faktiskt släppte in mig. Alltså mina idéer är det inget fel på. Det bubblar om idéer i min hjärna hela tiden. Men alltså det här utförandet, det är ju inte jag. Det kunde de ha sett på mina på det jag gjorde. Det var inte jag, men jag kom in där och så kämpade jag på. Jag hade hur kul som helst i och för sig under själva utbildningen. Men det ledde ju bara till att jag hamnade till slut på ett ställe som jag var helt fel för. Jag fick jobba extremt hårt för att bara passa in. Jag var ju livrädd för jättemånga uppgifter som jag fick. Och, jag gick från ställe till ställe. Jag var på flera ställen, men lika rädd varje gång. Därför det var inte jag. Det var ju min för detta pojkvän som tyckte att jag skulle vara bra på det. Jag kan inte det där. Jag är inte intresserad av att jobba inom några mallar eller så. Hela den resan var ju så fel. Och till och med så fel att när jag hade fått min son och jag satt på kvällarna och bara svettades för att få ihop någorlunda layout på sakerna, så kände jag att gränsen hade nått, så jag var helt slut och typ mattat ut mig. Och jag sa upp mig. Jag visste ingenting om att sjukskrivning för en sån sak, utan jag bara återhämtade mig så gott jag kunde. Så gott man kunde som småbarnsmamma. Men det var så fel. Och jag fick också söka typ 1000 jobb inom reklambranschen för att bara få ett. Eller jag fick i alla fall lägga ner alldeles för mycket tid. Visst, jag har ju lärt mig saker säkert. Inte för att det märks särskilt mycket på mina sociala medier. Det fanns ju inte ens sociala medier då. Men det hade ju varit väldigt mycket lättare om jag hade förstått att min gåva är att arbeta med människor. Att jag skulle coacha, kanske ännu hellre kunnat ägnat och blivit gått någon lång utbildning eller inom det här. Så se hur fel det kan gå när man inte riktigt vet vem man är och vad som är så. Och hur viktigt det är. Och jag tror att vi förlorar varandra i relationer. Vi förlorar i så mycket på att kliva ut från oss själva. Och jag, som sagt, har väl en viss gåva att våga vara mig själv. Annars skulle jag inte ha den här podden och kunna stå upp för varje avsnitt. Ja, det gör jag väl inte. Men nästan alla avsnitt och att jag vågar det och i huvud taget så är jag väl, har jag den gåvan. Jag tror att om man vill ge till sina barn att våga vara sig själv, så är det att ge kärlek som inte är prestationsriktat. För att då växer man och vågar vara sig själv till fullo, och kritik och sånt rinner av en lättare. Ja, det är ett väldigt viktigt ämne, för allt, att man inte är sig själv, det är ju liksom vilken kraftansträngning. Bara anstränga sig själv hela tiden att vara någonting annat och sen på det också jobba. Nej, det hoppas jag att ni får lite tankeställare eller inspiration av det här avsnittet.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Jag har ju öppnat upp min coaching, och det kan jag för jag har utökat dagarna här och på Yogamanna då. Och är det så att du vill komma närmare dig själv, minska stressen, ha hjälp med prestationskrav, hitta vad du vill i livet, kanske byta jobb, så är du varmt välkommen att gå in på carolinorbeli.com och signa upp. Och Jag jobbar i ett program där vi börjar med att identifiera problem, riktning, mål, hinder och liksom ta reda på vem är du och hur önskar du leva. Men för att sen då så fortsätter vi arbeta med blockeringar, prestationskrav, rädslor, inövande mönster, gränser, tankar och såklart stresshantering. Och det gör vi för att jag vill hjälpa dig att bygga upp ett självledarskap där du kan skapa nya visioner för ett hållbart liv och må bra utifrån dig själv. Så är du intresserad av det så är du som sagt välkommen att gå in på carolinnorbeli.com. I maj, den 25 maj till den 28 så har jag mitt retreat, vandring och yoga-retreat i Deja. Det finns 4 platser kvar, maximum 4 platser kvar. Och det är otroligt härligt. Vi har en kock som lagar hälsosamt mat och Deja i sig är helt fantastiskt. Och våren där, den är ju sprudlande. Det är ju bara så här blommor överallt och så vackert. Så det får ni inte missa. Gå in på carolinnorbeli.com och gör en intresseanmälan. För det här avsnittet så har jag intervjuat på engelska. Och ha lite överseende. Jag övar. Snart kommer fler intervjuer utomlands. Jag är väldigt långsam. Ni kan ju öka upp hastigheten. Jag har nämligen intervjuat en jätteinspirerande person som heter Neo Moriton. Och han har jobbat inom tech. Han har gjort en lång resa med sig själv. Och idag jobbar han med människor och företag. Och det som fick mig att bli jätteintresserad av honom är att han har skrivit den här boken Being Real for Change. Och för er som känner till Urban Ohm så är det även han som har startat det. Lyssna till Neo Moriton. Welcome to Prestationspodden, Neo.
Hey, thank you. Nice to be here, Caroline.
How was your morning?
It was... I'm just looking at the little photo of my daughter that I put on my desk. It was wonderful being with her, holding her hand, taking her to the bus. And I got a bonus kiss today. I got 5 instead of 4.
How old is she?
She's 10.
Oh, that's good. Still kissing you.
Other boys soon, I guess.
Yeah. Enjoy. Do you have any routines for the morning except for being with your daughter?
Morning routines, actually no, but I have nighttime routines. I have a sense that the morning starts the night before, and so my morning routines have moved to the day before.
That's good. What are you doing in the evening?
You know, the day we have the accumulation of a lot of impressions. And what I realized was that my morning routines used to involve getting up very early or having cold showers, the kind of things that you can find in many books. But what I realized was unless we are consciously clearing the pathways for good quality sleep the night before, the morning is going to be affected. I also thought that we're sleeping for 8 hours, and what a great productive time to let our subconscious and our conscious mind actually unite and feel blessed. So with prayer in the evening the night before for about 5 to 10 minutes, it puts the 8 hours-ish that I'm asleep into good productivity. So I wake up feeling very blessed.
I agree with you. You have to get from work mood or life mood into something else before going to bed. Tell us, who are you?
I'll give you the identity first. My name is Neo. I grew up in London. I've been living in Sweden now for over 10 years, and I came here from New York and I'm slowly becoming a good student of life, but I haven't mastered that one yet. I thought for a while I was a good teacher, but I got rid of that persona, and now I'm dedicated to becoming a great student.
What brought you to Sweden?
Existence. In the form of meeting my partner in India, and we fell in love and had a few options to move to my home in New York, to move to my birthplace, London, or Sweden, this cold, dark place in Scandinavia, and yeah. Sweden won. So before okay. we knew it, here we were, and that's what brought me to Sweden.
And it's very lovely in February.
Yeah, exactly. I love the gravel in the shoes and the fresh air. Yeah.
So, what are you working with?
That's a great question. You know, I say to people that before 2001, I was working in tech. In Silicon Valley, and I focused a lot on strategy and felt lousy. After 2001 until now, I've focused on state of being to help other people feel good, and of course working on myself feeling good also. And I felt better, but still not great. And then just recently I wrote a book and launched a tech company called Microshift, which both projects are wholly focused on helping people feel better. And I noticed that I actually start to feel better myself in that gift and that offering for helping people along their way too. So what I'm working on is that, just spreading a little bit now, the message, helping people.
And Urban Om.
Here we are. Urban Om is a center for transformation, and it was something we started some years back. It was an original dream and vision to bring people together and to create what we called a place to be, that people could be themselves 100% and all that they were meant to be. And it was small at the beginning and started off with I remember our first yoga meditation classes. We were jumping for joy if more than, nine people joined. It was a celebration when we said, well, there's double digits, there's 10 people. And then at its peak before Corona, we literally had queues of people trying to get into the studio and attend yoga classes. So yes, Urban Om is alive and is a real heart project, a real soul project. So we're really proud. My partner and I are really proud of what we've contributed there. And the community is amazing.
Have you ever had, when you were in Silicon Valley, did you feel burned out or were you?
I'm not sure what burnout. I'm not sure if I was, but I definitely had what I call a sensory conflict. And by that, I mean that the vision I had for how I wanted to live and how I wanted to be with other people didn't marry with how I was. And there was a conflict. There was a lack of integrity. So my vision was obviously, as most people who were practicing yoga in that time over 20 years ago, we wanted to feel good and do good. But I didn't feel good and I wasn't doing good. And I think that created a seed of, you could call it burnout or depression or something. But I was one of the lucky ones. I caught it early and stopped everything. I stopped work and moved to Australia to dedicate my entire life to yoga, meditation, and therapy. It was meant to be for 1 year. I thought that I could do it all in 1 year, but I'm still working on it 20 years later. The journey continues. So, no, I had a life crisis in the sense that, my vision didn't match with my actions. And I call that a sensory conflict, being out of integrity. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm still arriving in who I am and how I am. And yes, work in progress.
What was people's reaction?
People were supportive. You know, it was at the time when 9/11 happened, so the world was completely upside down. I was meant to be on a plane that morning. I had a ticket booked from San Francisco to New York City, and got a text message from my mother at like 0600 San Francisco. It was 0900 New York and 1400 London. She was in London. She said, "Are you flying today?" And I was like, "Yeah, I am. I'm just, you know, waking up on my way to the airport. I'm going to New York." And she said, "Have you seen the news?" And I was like, "No." So I flicked on the television in the hotel that we were in and, you know, kind of blinked open my eyes. And the first plane had just hit the Twin Towers. And the second plane, you know, I was there, you know, jaw dropped, seeing it live as it was happening. And so there was no way of getting on that plane that day. And we were stranded in San Francisco for 5 days, not able to get out. So the whole world was upside down and many people were reevaluating their lives. And our choice was to just move and do yoga and live on a beach. And so it wasn't really a big surprise to anyone because at that point, anything was possible. Oh. You know, it was a real opening, I think, for many people to make a big shift in their lives. So we did. We took a long holiday, a sabbatical.
How was that for you?
That was really life-changing. That was really life-changing. Mm-hmm. I remember arriving to Byron Bay, Australia. We went via Austria, my girlfriend at the time. We had a yellow Labrador that was with us in Austria and London. And then we put the dog into quarantine for 1 month, which I would probably never do again, but we're glad we did it. He came with us. And I remember walking down the streets of Byron Bay, like other people were in bare feet, right? So I was like, oh, I'll take my shoes off. And so we were all of a sudden walking bare feet in Byron Bay, living 20 meters from the beach. After 1 month, our dog came out of quarantine and we were doing yoga meditation for 6 to 8 hours a day. And the rest of the time walking our dog on the beach. And so it was a radical shift. And it was actually one of the first times in my life that I felt safe. And I hadn't realized that I'd felt fearful up until that point. I grew up in London. It wasn't the easiest time in London. I didn't live in the most easiest of places, and then lived in Hong Kong and traveled a lot in China and just grew up with this feeling of being alert, but never made a big deal out of it. And when I got to Byron Bay, all of a sudden, everybody is chilled out. And I realized the first time in my life, I actually felt safe. And that was a big wake up call. And it was the beginning of like, well, what about feeling not just safe, but feeling good, feeling well? But that was the beginning of a long journey. I realized feeling safe and well is not so easy. It's not just a flick of a switch.
Did you practice in yoga before you went to that trip, or was that your first meeting with yoga and meditation?
No, you know, yoga was, I remember practicing yoga in the 90s in London. And at that time, you know, people were still wearing orange clothes and burning incense, which I wasn't sure if it was some kind of drug or not. You know, I was new to that. So yoga was at that point not mainstream at all. It trickled its way from India to London. And eventually, you know, LA yoga, which I would call hot vinyasa and vinyasa yoga and all of the kind of like the yoga stars in the 2000 era made its way into Europe. But the yoga that I accessed was orange clothes. And it was very, very traditional, Satyananda and Shivananda. And I would go there as a refuge. It was my sneaky kind of like exit from business into finding peace and solace in a yoga studio. But I thought it was a bit weird and I didn't really quite fit in. And then of course it started to become mainstream and a bunch of us were on that wave, riding that wave in 2000, you know.
But when you worked, what was not really you? Why didn't you really like it where you were?
You know, it was really simple. I was discovering so many things. So I think in life, you know, we're either operating out of memory. And I think the risk is the older we get, we are starting to become more set in our ways because we've lived a long life. We can look back and have a reference for how we did things before. So as we become more mature, I think that our journey is to keep opening our mind and become more creative. But when we're in our 20s, we don't have that much life experience. So much is ahead of us. And it's exciting in the one way. It's exhilarating. But it's also, there's an uncertainty as to how to step into these big shoes. And I was stepping into really big shoes. I was working for tech companies that had huge valuations and working for a boss who was totally inspiring and a brilliant man, and he expected great things from me. So the expectation was really high, and I couldn't fulfill that, right? Or didn't quite know how. So there was an inherent stress in that. Mm. And when there's a stress, you know, the 1 hour yoga once a week didn't really balance the drinking and the partying that I was doing to get out of my head to deal with the stress. So the biggest thing that didn't work for me in my work life before the new life was that I was dealing with stress through taking on new addictions that got me out of my head into a temporary high. And you know, growing up in London in the 90s, obviously all sorts of things were very accessible, and being in and around San Francisco. So that was my inability to manage my life, and I just wanted to find a way to not think about it. So I would drink myself into oblivion, like many people did. But it became a problem for me because I was trying to marry the bliss I felt through yoga, where I didn't take anything, with this, you know, fake bliss I felt through doing some kind of drugs or alcohol that would make me feel terrible the day after. And they were like a violation. The two parts didn't fit anymore in life. And it's like the good and bad force. You know, if you think about the light and the dark in Star Wars, you know, the dark side was so strong, pulling me into this like money and drugs, alcohol, partying. And there was this little candle of light called yoga. And eventually I chose the candle and made that light a little bit bigger over time.
What do you think that Swedish people are stressed? I mean, there's so many burnouts.
I think there's two things, and this is just my perspective. And firstly, anyone who is experiencing that, my heart goes out fully, because one thing I've learned working as a therapist now for 20 years is that everybody has their own story. Everybody deals with it in their own way, and nobody else can truly understand what the interior world of someone else looks like. We can attempt to feel it. We can exercise compassion, but nobody really knows. So I don't know what one burnout is, but what I am seeing from people that I work with a lot is there's one fundamental core of what creates stress in people. And that's what we call this being out of integrity, not listening sufficiently inside or acting on the insights that you gain, and not living your life as an integral part of how you want to be, and not speaking out with honesty. And I call that the solution, being real. So, you know, being real is towards yourself, being true to yourself, which takes a lot of courage, but being real also to others, so that eventually if you can live a life where you say what you mean what you say, and you're not mean when you say it, and you do what you say you're going to do, there is an integrity. And with integrity comes dignity, self-respect, self-love, self-care. But this is not a one-off happening. You can have glimpses of this through yoga, meditation retreats, and therapy. But what I've realized is being real is what we call micro training. It's something that needs to happen every single day to repair the inner trust bank, the integrity that we've lost over the years. So that was a kind of long and mixed answer to your question.
I think it's a good burnout,
you know, be real, mm-hmm. Be real, be honest, be true, and live your life according to that.
Okay, as a coach and as a human being, I meet a lot of people who have problem being real. They are really good at their work, or they have relationship which works, but they are not happy. And I can tell they have problem to know how to be real. What are your advice for them? How is it possible to find what's real?
So if we look back into childhood and adult development, being real, or the ability to discern what's real over what's not, is not really developed in us as human beings until later on in life, around post 20. And it's linked to the prefrontal cortex and the frontal lobes, our executive function, the ability to reason. The problem is that as young adults, we put being right over being real. We almost take the ability to reason too far. And I think in Sweden, the ability to reason is extremely strong. You know, even I saw at Arlanda once, you know, Sweden is a state of minds. And I was like, whoa. What I love about this is that in Sweden, there's a deep sincerity. People are very straight. They're very direct. And there is an ability to reason and see the logical perspective. What I've noticed, my partner and her family run a center called Bharavara that's been running for 25 years. So we've seen, you know, 10,000 people on this long, courageous hero's journey, basically, to put being real over being right. And the missing link is the heart connection. Now, Swedes are some of the most heartful people I've ever met. The problem is they keep it quite private. So you've got the development of reason, which comes later on in life. And if you journey back in life, you know, 0 to 7, we're basically sensory sponges. There is no ability to reason whatsoever. As kids, we're looking at the facial expressions of our parents, and we're responding to the tone of voice, and we're actually responding to the state of being of our guardians. And we are sensory sponges. We are wide open, okay? And the bad news is that we don't remember any of that either, right? Then you've got this period 7 to 14, the kind of peripubescent areas. And you've got the onset of hormones. And hormones can come early, or they can come in the teenage years, 13 onwards. But there's this hormonal overload. So you don't really have this sense of what's yours and what's not. You're completely confused because the brain is going through this fireworks explosion. Your bones are growing. You're just spurting up. So you go through this period of confusion during teenage years. But you're not without conscience. You have conscience. So what happens is you act in a way that's out of integrity with what you want to be, but you can't do much about it because your hormones are going wild, but you have a conscience. On some level, you don't feel good about that, which makes you feel a bit worse. Then from 18 onwards, we get this sprint of neurological development where our ability to reason kicks in, but we are a little bit plagued with regrets for how we've been in our teenage years, and we cannot at that point put real over right, so we become invested in being the way we are, being right, because society says to us.
I see many people like that, and myself. I mean, how I was as a teenager is embarrassing, so I try to keep, I try to be something which is more normal now. So
you're absolutely right. You know, teenage, I love that, the embarrassment or shame. We carry shame that we were confused. We don't know how it went in there, but we're left with a feeling of how we were that's a bit shameful. And this is one of the main reasons that teenagers drink so much. So the phrase I had on Friday nights with my friends in London when I grew up was, let's get out of our heads. Because guess where shame lives? Basically in the mind. So we use whatever we can to get intoxicated, to get out of our minds, which makes us feel worse, and we become this compound feel worse effect. And then in our 20s, if we're lucky, the light bulb goes off. Maybe we go to a yoga class. Maybe we go to Bharavara. Maybe we meet a coach like you, someone who's inspiring, who brings not just the ability to reason, but someone who has compassion, so that for once maybe in our life, we feel felt by someone. We feel seen. We feel understood. And that can take us on a path of eventually putting real over right. But it needs training. So the spark and the light is very important. So I think that's at the root of burnout.
I agree with you fully after been talking to over 200 people. This is to leave yourself and have like a space from yourself during days, and also have a lot of things to do and responsibilities. It gets too much for us.
It does. It does, especially if when we do what we need to do and we're not there. And now we open into another subject called connection. As human beings, we have an incredible capacity to do a lot ourselves or inspire others to do things with us. And let's call that collaborative leadership, right? But if we're not connected, then we're heavily into doing, our being is being neglected, and that becomes exhausting. So the question is then, how can we continuously or at regular intervals during our day get reconnected so that we're not doing more, but we're doing more of what matters most, and we're doing what's meaningful for just ourselves and the loved ones and the society around us? So I'm not sure that the doing less movement and slowing down, I'm not sure. I actually say do what matters most and speed that up, do more of that, and get connected at every step along the way. You know, I say that it's like David Allen meets Dalai Lama. David Allen became famed for this getting things done, GTD methodology, be efficient, get things done. But people became completely exhausted. They became human doings. Dalai Lama, on the other hand, says human beings do less. But that didn't work for most people either who live in the West, who come from perhaps a background of their families were productive, their families may be white-collar, blue-collar workers. We are in a society where people do things. We earn our livelihoods. So simply to do nothing was too far out. Mm. And I call that the path of meditation versus the path of manifestation. And we've created a separation between the two. I did it. I went from Silicon Valley to effectively the monastery. And when I was in the monastery, I was longing to come back into life. Then when I came back into life, I was longing for the monastery. Mm-hmm. So Urban Om was created actually as an example, as an experiment, as a laboratory. How do we create the urban of living in a city with the silence of Om and have them unite? Because people I find living in the West want to find that sweet spot. How can I live in a life of manifestation, of creativity, of having a family, doing what I love, but have that quality of meditation? So Dalai Lama meets David Allen. It's not just getting things done or not doing anything. It's getting the right things done and being in a connected state when you do it.
Many people, I mean, they like what they do, but they are scared when they perform. I mean, they are scared at work. They're scared when they have to speak in front of audience. They're scared. Oh, I meet a lot of people like that. Why do you think, why are they scared?
So, yeah, so fear, you know, fear is a really important primal feeling. You know, when we're scared of something we're about to do, we haven't exercised what's called our prospective intelligence, looking forward. All we look at is back, our retrospective intelligence. And the last time we talked in public, we felt bad. We haven't established a new neural pathway. So A, we're limiting ourselves. B, the amygdala that kicks in for fear is a really important primal reaction. We have to acknowledge the fear, like, wow, this is fear. Why? It's not about the public speaking, for example. It's about the unknown. I don't know what's going to come, and therefore I'm a bit scared. So two ways to deal with that: acknowledge the fear and imagine what the future might look like. Feel the feeling of what that feeling might feel like. And the thing to short circuit the whole thing is, here's the problem. Whenever we're feeling excessive fear, we make it a story. Fear as a primal feeling is okay, but when it becomes identified, it becomes a story. We are becoming obsessive self-centric. We become obsessed with ourselves. It becomes me, 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 me. And one way to short circuit that is to think of someone else. So if you're public speaking, imagine one or two people in the audience who might be moved by your heartfelt connection and have a vision for how you want them to feel, as well as including the fear the inspiration and the passion for what you feel, and what you end up with is a rainbow of feelings. Sunlight plus rain, the rain of the tears and the sunlight of a new dawn. When those two come in together, it's like an explosion of consciousness. So we have to include other people. The problem is we obsess too much about ourselves.
Yeah. You get caught up with yourself, sort of, in a bad way. I love your book title, In Being Real for a Change. You've been talking about being real, but tell us, how come you wrote that book and what is it about? Because I haven't read it yet. I want to, though.
Yeah, thank you. It was actually inspired by Issa, my partner, and I, when we were in India and before our daughter was born. And we said, if there's one thing we can give to each other, it's being real with one another. And a light bulb went off, and we said, oh, being real for a change, wouldn't that be a great manifesto? Because, you know, most of the time we're putting right over real. And because right, you know, someone wins, someone loses, whereas real, everybody transforms. And that's a scary place to be. There's a vulnerability, there's an unknown there. And it's better for us as humans with our limited mindset to stay with what we know. And what we know is our story. And our story is not real. It's been concocted in our minds. So it takes a big dollop of courage to step out of our comfort zone and actually start to live a life that's more real. And so when I wrote the book, I looked back at my own life and took an inventory and looked at a few key phases where I think other people could probably relate to. When I was younger, I didn't feel confident. It was hard for me to focus at school. I was intelligent, but not a very good student. And also was caught up on image. I was conscious of being liked and being attractive when I got into my teenage years. And I was trying to get out of who I was because I wanted to be someone else. I wanted to be the projection of what people thought of me. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's what you could call performing. Yeah, exactly. A lot of people, maybe that's what we call performing, which is basically trying to be someone other than ourselves. That's what performing is. And I didn't hear any kind of language of authenticity, be the author of your life, you know, be yourself, everybody else is taken, you're a snowflake, there is enough snowflakes on the snow mountain for everyone. I didn't get any of that. You know, I grew up on a path of you should go to school, go to university and earn money and do good and maybe have a family. There was no room for originality. There was no room for artistry in life as well. There was a conveyor belt. So I was basically ended up, you know, in this boxed in place and was dying just to break free of that. And like I say, my doorway to freedom was drugs and alcohol, which I think a lot of people's is too. And then what really scared me actually, and when the title of the book came, was that then I changed my image and I became like the image of a guru. But it also wasn't real. I was doing yoga. I was like a black belt in yoga, black belt coach, black belt therapist. But it also wasn't real. It was just another identity. I had just transposed one for the other because deep down I felt out of integrity. I hadn't actually done the deep digging work of what is it to be real and who am I without the white clothes or the shaved head or the long hair or the beads? Who am I? And that was a painful path because I thought that going into the light and doing more yoga would solve everything, and it didn't. So after a long time, 14 years of 100% dedicated search, it's all I did. And meanwhile, by the way, I did what other yogis aspire to, and a lot of us did in mid-2000, was start a charity. You had yogis like Shiva Ray, Baron Baptiste, and of course the Indian yogis created a not-for-profit organization to help other people. So I did that too. in 2007 in Manhattan. My co-founder and I, we started an organization called Reach Within that served children living in orphanages in the West Indies. And we would commute every month to be with kids in orphanages and work with them. We developed an incredible yoga program, yoga therapy for kids. We partnered with Harvard University, Harvard Health International to make sure that we were on track with our evaluative criteria, with a medical school. You know, like, we did everything right, but it was another image. It was called the image of not just feel good, but do good too. But it wasn't real, because the person that I went to bed with at night was me, and I was still full of this thing called the ego that yoga talked about, but I wasn't able to find it in Trikonasana, in Downward Dog, in Vinyasa, in Ashtanga. Somehow the drug of yoga made me feel good for an hour or two during and one or two hours after, but the pain of who I was when I was stressed or feeling insecure or scared would rear its ugly head and take over my life. And there I was thinking, oh my God, Silicon Valley gave me riches in one way. That didn't make me happy. Yoga gave me riches in another way. I felt well momentarily, and that didn't work. So I had to go back to the roots, which was the kind of work that we do at Bharavara. I went on an incredible...
Did you say it was your wife having Bharavara?
Oh, yes, cool. Issa and her mother, Gayanne, and Lars Knudson, they founded Bharavara 25 years ago.
Oh, so, I'd love to go there someday.
It's an incredible place. And for me, the inner engineering or the inner restructuring that's talked about in yoga, it's called Svadhyaya, you know, self-inquiry, self-study. But it's glossed over in yoga around the world nowadays in reciting scriptures or chanting mantras, which I really love. But what I needed, because I think I was really screwed up, I really needed some deep and dark weeding and replanting flowers. And that wasn't done in one retreat. It was done over a period of 5 to 8 years of intense group psychotherapy. So I'm deeply grateful to that. What it gave me was not the feeling I'm done, but the feeling that my life is still in progress. I'm also deeply grateful to the 12-step program. I went into a 12-step recovery program 15 years ago for alcohol and addiction, and that is the most extensive, loving, free process that I think has helped millions of people have a spiritual awakening and be very real along the way.
Yeah. And that was at Bharavara as well, the alcohol.
Oh, 12-step program.
Oh, 12 steps.
I started.
Sorry, I didn't hear. Okay, 12-step. Oh, I heard so much.
I started in Marbella, Spain, and then carried on in New York. And nowadays with Zoom, my 12-step meetings, I join in L.A., on Saturday nights when I can, because I just love the realness of the international groups of people in recovery. There's a lot of angels out there who are in service and helping people on their path to recovery too. Like, my God, these people are real yogis. It's incredible.
Do you feel what you work with now with companies and with your book and? Are you more real, or are you still having an image?
You know, God gifted me with a body, so I sit in a nearly 2 meter body. God gifted me with a voice, and God gifted me with a passion that packs into my words. So I speak with perhaps a degree of intensity and passion. Is that real? Yeah, real looks original. You know, real doesn't have to look like a quietly spoken person. That's the image that I was trying to portray. So
okay.
Am I performing? I don't know. I'm on a mission. And I want to speak it out. And that's actually the DNA. That's always been my character. You know, people around me have said that I like to retreat and take my quiet time, which I do. It can be very personal and private. But there's a part of me in my character, my DNA, that is just oozing. And so So that's real. That's real.
Can you notice when you meet someone, maybe someone, a strong character you look up to, that you shrink as a person? Or have you noticed that? That you could like change your ways with when you're among others?
Yeah, I like that. I really like that. So one particular image comes to mind. I met this guy, therapist, same height as me, Spanish, gorgeous, big. and all of a sudden I was like, whoa, this is a really gorgeous, powerful person. And for a moment, I felt what you're saying. There's a part of me that shrank. I felt intimidated. But the difference was that I said to him, wow, in your presence, I notice I shrink. You're an awesome person. Who are you? And he just opened up. He said, wow, brother, thanks for sharing that. He said, finally, I feel a bit the same with you. And I was like, oh, my God. So the difference is feel it and express it. You know, being real should be tough on you, mm-hmm. not the other person. If it's tough on the other person, that's not being real. That's a projection. So I could have said to this guy, you know, wow, who do you think you are? Can't you keep it down a little bit? Can't you keep your energy down? But tough on me was like, dude, I feel intimidated in your presence and I notice this and I just want to bring that into our relational field right now because mm-hmm. I'm all about being honest and real. That's tough on me, mm-hmm. not him.
Mm-hmm. That will surprise people though, in the meeting or whatever. But
you know, the greatest artists, when you're in their presence, there mm-hmm. is a degree of the heart flutters because, you know, true artists are in their pure authorship. What they're saying, what they're channeling, there's an originality. It's not rehearsed. You know, and of course, that might surprise people, but it actually might surprise people for the good. You know, being real for a change is like if you're real and you're connected in your heart, actually things around you might change in a big way.
Have you met any kind of downsides when it comes to being real? Have people rejected you?
You know, I believe there's a right fit for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're looking for a soul partner and having a family, you don't need to have a soul partnership with 7 billion people on the planet. You need to find soul partner with one or maybe a few in your lifetime. And so same with resonance with people and groups. I love the saying, you know, diversity invites someone to the party and inclusion invites them to dance. And the dance itself is this great communion of two souls. But in a party, you can't dance with everybody. So I love to think of being real as everybody's invited to the party. A few people will be invited to dance. And then that cheek-to-cheek moment is when you feel the magic happen. So I think it's all good. I think there's, you know, we're all going to make it. I think there's enough for everybody. I think that, you know, if we go searching to please everybody all of the time, then again, we're making it obsessively about ourselves. I think if we can commit to being clear and authentic and loving and have a real vision for how you want the other person to feel, to include their feelings in your heart, you're existentially going to be connected to everyone all of the time.
But in the process, being real, I think the first person sort of inside of you you meet is like a little child. I do anyway, if I look inside. I mean, someone who is not met by you or by others, not seen, someone we left. Or maybe that's the reason why we're scared of being ourselves, because it's quite vulnerable when you look inside. Can you agree with that?
I think that's beautiful. I think that you know, we expect a lot from children. We expect them to, if we go back to the brain development, we expect them to be able to reason, right? And they can't. And we expect them to reason like adults, but they can't. But adults our expectation of ourselves is to include the child. You've been every year that you've grown up, you've been a 0, 1-year-old, you've been a 2-year-old, 3-year-old. And so I think what's transforming is what I hear you're saying is the inclusion of who you are and how you've been all the way back to the beginning of your life. And so you're right, being real has to include first what is being felt in this moment. And you're going to feel the some parts of your past, meaning the memories and feelings you had as a kid, the confusion of a teenage, the striving as a young adult. The inclusivity, the wholeness of being real is to really acknowledge and feel that. And the key to that is connection. Mm. The key to it is connection, right? If we're not connected to ourselves, it's very hard to acknowledge the feelings that we have. And to get connected, the good thing is it's binary. You're either connected or you're not. And if we took a moment right now and said, I'm going to get more connected or I'm going to get connected, notice what happens mostly for people is we probably take a breath, we probably slow down, we probably gently close our eyes, and then we get connected. And this is why I feel that yoga has been such a gift to the world, because people have more of a sensory coherence. So we go from sensory conflict, what you feel is different to what you say. People don't perceive your words because they're noticing different expressions or different subcommunication. Mm-hmm. But when you bring a sensory coherence that you're connected to your feelings, you have a passion and a vision to be real, and that real is tough on you, not the other, mm-hmm. you start to align what you feel with what you think and what you do and say or write. And then people feel you. They may not agree with you. And your job is not for people to agree with you. Your job is to be lovingly kind and compassionate and to live your life out fully, 100%. Your vibe will attract your tribe, and you don't need the tribe to be 7 billion people. Mm. So yes, inclusivity of all of the feelings that are going on inside of you, connecting to that, then align feelings, thoughts, actions, words, writing, and live according to that. You know, I love this word authorship, authenticity, authority. Authority is not forceful, it's aligned.
Thank you so much, Neil. This was a very interesting conversation, and also a subject which I've been talking a lot about in this podcast because. It's so important, I will read your book. And have you a recommendation for me, someone to interview in the podcast? Perhaps your wife.
It's exactly what I was thinking. I think you'd really enjoy meeting with her, especially on the inner child work. Yes. And she likes to talk about the superego and the inner judge. I think you're going to enjoy that with her.
Please get me connected with her.
I will.
I tried to find Bora Bora. I've always been interested in you.
Good. We'll do that.
Thank you very much. And if people want to buy your book, where should they?
In Sweden, the best is Adlibris or Bookus. Adlibris Bookus, yeah. Mm. And you can get it online, Adlibris website or Bookus website.
Are you on Instagram or?
Urban Om is on Instagram. Urban Om Stockholm.
Thank you so much. Have a lovely day and weekend.
You too. Thank you so much.
Tack till alla ni som lyssnar. Ni som vill göra mig extra glad, gå in på iTunes och lämna en recension. Jag blir överlycklig. Så gör det. Skriv vad ni tycker om podden, för att sprids den till andra. Men framförallt, ta hand om er och vi hörs nästa vecka.